Chapter 8. Prior to the bankruptcy and my unlikely rise in prominence in Ford County, I had heard a fascinating story about a local family. Spot never pursued it because it would have required some light research and a trip across the railroad tracks. Now that the paper was mine, I decided it was too good to pass up. Over in Lowtown, the colored section, there lived an extraordinary couple, Kalia and Esau Ruffin. They had been married for over 40 years and had raised 8 children, 7 of whom had earned PhDs and were now college professors. Details on the remaining one were sketchy, though. According to Margaret, his name was Sam, and he was hiding from the law. I called the house and Mrs. Ruffin answered the phone. I explained who I was and what I wanted, and she seemed to know everything about me. She said she'd been reading the Times for 50 years, front to back, everything including the obits and the want ads, and after a moment or two offered the opinion that the paper was in much better hands now. Longer stories, fewer mistakes, more news. She spoke slowly, clearly, with precise diction I had not heard since I left Syracuse. When I finally had an opening, I thanked her and said I'd like to meet and talk about her remarkable family. She was flattered and insisted that I come over for lunch. Thus began an unusual friendship that opened my eyes to many things, not the least of which was Southern cuisine. My mother died when I was 13. She was anorexic. There were only 4 pallbearers. She weighed less than 100 pounds and looked like a ghost. Anorexia was only one of her many problems. Because she did not eat, she did not cook. I cannot remember a single hot meal she prepared for me. Breakfast was a bowl of Cheerios, lunch a cold sandwich, dinner some frozen mess I usually ate in front of the television alone. I was an only child and my father was never at home, which was a relief because his presence caused friction between them. He preferred to eat, she did not. They feuded over everything. I never went hungry. The pantry was always full of peanut butter and cereal and such. I occasionally ate with a friend, and I always marveled at how real families cooked and spent so much time at the table. Food was simply not important around our house. As a teenager, I existed on frozen dinners. At Syracuse, it was beer and pizza. For the first 23 years of my life, I ate only when I was hungry. This was wrong, I soon learned in Clanton. In the South, eating has little to do with hunger. The Ruffin home was in a nicer section of Lowtown, in a row of neatly preserved and painted shotgun houses. The street addresses were on the mailboxes, and when I rolled to a stop, I was smiling at the white picket fence and flowers, peonies and irises that lined the sidewalk. It was early April. I had the top down on my Spitfire, and as I turned off the ignition, I smelled something delicious. Pork chops. Kalia Ruffin met me at the low swing gate that opened into her immaculate front lawn. She was a stout woman, thick in the shoulders and trunk, with a handshake that was firm and felt like a man's. She had gray hair and was showing the effects of raising so many children, but when she smiled, which was constantly, she lit up the world with 2 rows of brilliant, perfect teeth. I had never seen such teeth. "I'm so glad you came," she said, halfway up the brick walkway. I was so glad, too. It was about noon. Typically, I had yet to eat a bite, and the aromas wafting from the porch were making me dizzy. "A lovely house," I said, gazing at the front of it. It was clapboard, painted a sparkling white, and gave the impression that someone was usually hanging around with a brush and bucket. A green tin-roofed porch ran across the entire front.
"Why, thank you. We've owned it for 30 years.
I knew that most of the dwellings in Lowtown were owned by white slumlords across the tracks. To own a home was an unusual accomplishment for blacks in 1970. "Who's your gardener?" I asked as I stopped to smell a yellow rose. There were flowers everywhere, edging the walkway, along the porch, down both sides of their property line.
"That would be me," she said with a laugh, teeth gleaming in the sunlight.
up 3 steps and onto the porch, and there it was, the spread. A small table next to the railing was prepared for 2 people, white cotton cloth, white napkins, flowers in a small vase, a large pitcher of iced tea, and at least 4 covered dishes. "Who's coming?" I asked.
"Oh, just the 2 of us. Esau might drop by later."
"There's enough food for an army." I inhaled as deeply as possible, and my stomach ached in anticipation.
"Let's eat now," she said, "before it gets cold."
I restrained myself, walked casually to the table, and pulled back a chair for her. She was delighted that I was such a gentleman. I sat across from her and was ready to yank off the lids and dive headfirst into whatever I found when she took both my hands and lowered her head. She began to pray.